1984, when I first really started researching permaculture by reading the magazines, I enjoy very much the interactions with my customers doing the install work.
Hello, and welcome to the Permaculture Vine podcast. My name is Cormac Harkin, and tonight we have Graham Torton. Welcome, Graham.
Hey, thanks, Cormac. Good to be here.
Graham, do you just want to give a quick 30-second introduction, if possible,
yeah,
just on who you are and what you're about?
You bet. So my name's Graham Towerton. I live in Michigan in the United States. Originally, I'm from Australia, and I've lived in two different states in Australia, New South Wales and Queensland predominantly. Also lived in Western Australia for a short period. Lived in several states here in the US, and I am a chemical engineer by training, but I've recently given up my career after 34 years as a chemical engineer. And now I am doing full-time permaculture design, consulting, and installation work for myself here in Michigan. And I'm also a contractor for Food Forest Abundance based out of Florida.
Great stuff. Welcome. And so we normally start just by, when did you first discover permaculture? And do you want to tell us that story?
Yeah, you bet. Well, as you'd be aware, permaculture was first created, founded in Australia by Bill Mollison, David Holmgren, as the two founders of permaculture. And they first started talking about it in the 1970s and through on into the 1980s. At that stage of my life, I was in elementary school when Bill Mollison first started teaching permaculture to his first students. But it wasn't until I got to high school in grade 11 in Australia. My parents had a farm that they operated. It was on 53 acres of subtropical land in Queensland, north of Brisbane, behind a town called Noosa up in the hills. And we grew small crops, things like peppers or capsicum, as we call them in Australia, cantaloupes or rock melons, as we call them in Australia, beans, zucchini, squash, all that kind of stuff, usually somewhere between 3 and 5 acres at a time, and plant that on the side of a hill that felt like it had a slope of 50%. In any event, we grew a lot of those crops, and we'd plant them, harvest them, clean them, package them, ship them off to market, trying to make money in the bulk wholesale produce market in Brisbane. And we didn't really do so well doing that. We made a living, just barely, paid the bills, enabled us to live on a farm and, enjoy that lifestyle. But it wasn't a millionaire's game, that's for sure, in terms of making lots and lots of money. But, it was a lot of hard work. And so my parents first started to look at, different ways to improve agriculture on their property, with me being, one of their leading farm workers. I started to read a lot of the same magazines that they were reading. And I've got one right here. It's the Earth Garden magazine, issue number one, that was issued in the early 1970s in Australia. It's a kind of a distant cousin to the Mother Earth News magazine that's based here in the United States. And I'm sure in your part of the world, Cormac, you've got similar, back to Earth and back to nature type magazines. But my parents were subscribers to Earth Garden and also another one called Grassroots Magazine. And those were heavily emphasis on homesteading, on being self-sufficient and generating your own energy, growing all your own food, etc. And so I was a devout reader of those while I was still in high school. And after I got out of high school and went to college, I then started subscribing myself to those same magazines. And I've got a very large collection of them now. And I've gone back through them from time to time to take a look. And you know, seen lots of articles about permaculture that were written by Bill Mollison and Jeff Lawton and David Holmgren in those magazines. And so that's really where I first started to learn about it, was reading those articles that they wrote. And in the same Earth Garden magazine, it was episode or issue number 22, where Bill Mollison, you know, published his first article in 1984. And that was one of the ones that I first read, because I was in my last year of high school in 1984 at the same time. And so that's one of the articles that I can kind of remember quite fondly. And he was introducing his book, you know, Permaculture One. And yeah, that sits on the bookshelf here back in behind me. I've got most of Bill Mollison's books. And so after reading through those articles, you know, my parents learned from it and said, you know, let's start planting some other stuff. So instead of just planting all of the annual crops that were taking so much labor, they started to then diversify into fruit trees. And so we started planting custard apples, tamarillos, avocados, all kinds of other, you know, subtropical and tropical fruit trees that we could grow on our property, passion fruit vines, citrus trees, all that kind of stuff. You know, and they recognized then that, you know, all the work that was associated with their annual crops was reduced tremendously, you know, by looking after permanent fruit trees. And so that's really where they were at the time I went to college. And I got to say, back in those days, you know, this is obviously before the internet, was even a little kid, you know, the only way that you could read about permaculture was in magazines and go to the library, borrow the books and stuff. And, you know, we didn't have access to a good library. So just those magazines is all I've had pretty much all the way through high school, college, and, you know, after I left college to read about permaculture. So I didn't think permaculture at that time was going to be a career for anyone. And went to college. As I said, I got my chemical engineering degree, went to work for the big oil companies. Shell in Sydney was where I started my career. And permaculture was not something, like I said, that I thought would be a career. So, you know, I didn't envision doing any consulting work or anything else like that. I only ever used permaculture then in my own gardens and on my own farms, you know, literally for the next 30 years, you know. So living first in Sydney, you know, on small suburban house lots, even on my rental property, you know, places that I rented from other folks, I would always do some gardening and, you know, plant more fruit trees and stuff like that if they'd let me do it. I was quite fortunate in most of the cases that places where I live where the owners would let me do that, because they could see the value in having some extra fruit trees and stuff on their property. And then we got our first property that we owned, myself and my wife, and I planted, gosh, I think a dozen fruit trees the first week that we moved in, just because I wanted to, without any kind of plan about where they should go, you know, without any consideration about guilds or anything else. I just wanted to get them in the ground because I knew that, you know, the sooner you plant them, you know, the quicker they get to growing and producing. And it wasn't probably more than 6 months after we moved into that property, Cormac, that my employer said, you're going to move all the way across to the west coast of Western Australia, and planting all of those fruit trees was for naught from my own perspective. But then I was fortunate enough to be able to purchase some land, and you know, 5 acres of land on the ranges east of Perth in Western Australia was where we lived for a few years. And that's where I really first started to put in place a lot of permaculture practices, you know, with the space available in a very, very dry climate where there's probably 6 to 10 inches of rainfall a year. That's where permaculture practices, you know, for me really first came into play, for trying to modify that land and improve the soil and be able to, you know, create a lot of fruit trees and vegetables.
Right. So you've been doing it a few years then?
Yeah.
Is there, suppose, how did you find getting onto the 5 acres? What was your approach there?
Yeah, well, again, as I mentioned, Cormac, very, very low rainfall. And that rainfall, it seems like it would always show up in about three rainstorms every year. The first part, most fundamental, obviously, was the storage of water or making sure I had water available, to cover my crops year round. And I can, recall that, you'd start getting the rainfall typically over winter, is when it would rain the most. You'd get a few, stray thunderstorms in the summertime that might deliver a little bit of rainfall, but most of the rain would come in the winter, and that's when the grass would all turn green and all the trees would turn green and flower and everything else. So that was actually one of my favorite parts of the year was winter in Western Australia. I mean, we'd hardly ever freeze at all, so you could still garden pretty much all year round. So, as I said, water was the most important aspect. So the first thing to do for me there was to start collecting, large quantities of rainfall. And I didn't have a lot of roof area. We lived in an old 1904 railway carriage from the West Australian Government Railway that had been converted into a little shack. And we lived in that, myself, my wife, and three kids for a couple of years.
Plus.
And it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was off-grid. We had some solar cells. We had solar hot water. We had a wood stove to provide backup heat for the hot water and for cooking. We had a backup generator, a small wind turbine as well. So, we had all the experiences of living off-grid there. And like I said, water was the most fundamental thing. We had to collect all of it that we needed for our household, for showers and baths and laundry and all the rest of it, plus also provide for the garden. So as you can imagine, with a small amount of rainfall and not a lot of roof area to collect rainwater, the first thing I did was actually add some more roofing area on my property, and I built a huge big patio off the side of the railway carriage, so I could create another like 120, 140 square meters, call it 1200, 1400 square feet of surface area to collect more rainwater, and then put on a bigger rainwater storage tank so that I could store a large amount of water. When we moved there, we only had like 200 gallons, call it 800 liters of water storage off the railway carriage. We had no well. So I put in place that roof and then put in place a 2,500 gallon rainwater storage tank. And that helped a lot to get us through all of the household needs. And then the next thing that I did was built another shed for storage and also for rainwater collection, and then stuck on a 30,000 gallon rainwater storage tank on the back end of that shed. And then had one of my friends come in and construct a dam on the place that would have held probably close to a quarter million gallons of water, so that we'd have that available for irrigation, for use on the farm. So that water infrastructure, putting in place, all of that storage, all that collection area, getting earthworks done so that I could create some swales and drainage ditches to direct more water into the dam for storage. That's probably what I did mostly for 2 years on that property, was to develop all of that water collection infrastructure. And once that was done, we found ourselves in a good position. I did get a well drilled that we could operate with a very small air-driven well pump that would produce maybe 500 liters a day of water. But that was inexpensive, to construct, and it worked. And it was, our backup for water supply in between the gaps in between the rainstorms. So, that's, like I said, what we did pretty much for 2 years was just focus on water. But once that was done, then we were able to plant almost to our heart's content. So then after, developing lots of raised bed gardens, and I did a lot of terracing. It was a fairly steep property. So a lot of rock retaining walls and gardens in behind those. And then we started planting lots and lots of vegetables. So by this, space of 3 years, we got to the point where we could grow most of our annual vegetables, and be self-sufficient for those. And then once I got that done, you know, that's when I really started focusing on planting then all of the fruit trees, the perennials.
And how long is there for then?
A total of about 4 years.
Right. So as soon as you got established, you had a lease.
And funnily enough, yeah, so one of my other friends, you know, I was chatting with online the other evening, I actually showed her that property where it was located, you know, and after I'd sold it, you know, the people who went in purchased it, had actually built a huge big house on there as well. But all of the other stuff that I put in place had all been left there, and you know, they'd just added to it, you know. So, you know, with the ability these days to see everything online, with aerial photography, I was really quite happy to take a look at that property, you know, literally 5 nights ago, and see that, you know, they continue to look after all the stuff that I put in place.
Oh, great
So,
stuff.
yeah, that was satisfying, and you know, that's the attitude I've always taken, Cormac, is that, you know, with my career and moving around a lot, myself and my wife, we've been married for 34 years, and we've, you know, moved like 30 times in 34 years. And you know, I've always just made the decision that I'm going to plant stuff anyway, you know, because the chances are if I stay, I get to use it. If I don't, somebody else does.
Now, we'll not go through all 30 properties. We could be here a while. So, do you want to skip right to your current property?
And this is probably, you know, I say probably our forever place. You know, we've been here 8 years now. You know, so after I tell you that we've moved around so much, you know, 8 years is a long time for us to be in one place. We did have a stint in California for 2 years. We've owned the property for 10. We've been on it for eight. And I've done a lot of work here. So again, you know, stepping back to when I first came here, this property, you know, the house that I'm in right now, the house was built in 1850. So it's, you know, one of the first homes that was ever built in this area. It's on a quarter section, a quarter square mile of land that surrounds me. But the folks that owned it, separated off all of the farmland and sold it to a neighboring farmer, sold me the house and the dairy barns and 2.3 acres of land. And so what I was faced with when I came here was not having access to like all the farmland and any significant acreage. And most of my land sits either underneath a concrete slab or underneath a building because I've got lots and lots of buildings around my home. So I started out first just by taking over an area of land on the west side of my property that gets plenty of sunshine. And it was literally horse pasture to start with. And so my first job was just trying to get some annual vegetables planted. We moved here kind of in late spring, and I really just wanted to try to get some vegetables growing just so I could, you know, have some food, you know, from our own garden. So I didn't really do any major like permaculture activities for that first year in 2014. And then in 2015 is where I went gangbusters on, you know, trying to put more permaculture stuff in place, more fruit trees, perennial plants, flowers, that kind of stuff. So it's 2015 that I really started, you know, what is my favorite activity to do in the fall is to go around the community and pick up all of the bagged leaves that people sweep up off their lawns, drag them back to my place, and then spread them out as a mulch to kill all the grass, you know, that I want to take over for my gardens. And on and off over the last 10 years, I've done that probably 4 or 5 times now, where I've gone around, collected 300 or 400 bags of leaves, brought them back, spread them, you know, 12 to 18 inches deep across my land, and let them sit there all through the winter. And what that does for me is it kills all the grass first, and all the weeds, if I don't want to have the weeds growing. It insulates the soil so it never really freezes. And, you know, the temperatures here can get down into the minus 20 centigrade quite comfortably in the wintertime in February. So if my soil doesn't freeze, then I'm able to, you know, obviously go into the ground earlier in the springtime because, you know, I can dig the soil. So there's been occasions where I've literally just raked back those leaves and planted potatoes or planted peas in the soil right underneath it in as early as late March or early April. And normally the frost-free period for me here is the middle of May. So the fact that I can get into the ground with things like that is just highly advantageous for me if I can do it. So then obviously the other thing that happens with all of those leaves is that it creates a lot of fertility in the soil. I've got really sandy soil in some parts and then really heavy clay in other parts. And so having all of those leaves as they rot down and get incorporated into the soil, the worms keep working at it all through winter. Again, I can in February, even if there's like 10 inches of snow on the ground, I can rake the leaves apart and see the worms working at the soil underneath the leaves.
Plus.
Yeah, so I know that all good stuff is happening, now on my place, all through the year rather than just for, 5 or 6 months through spring and summer and fall. So I then pile up all those leaves after I'm done with using them as the insulation blanket and mulch over the winter and after I've killed off all the grass. And then I'll just let them compost. And Cormac, I think you've seen some of my compost piles before, where I've had my chickens doing all the work to rake them and fertilize them all at the same time, turn them over. I'll rake those piles back up and I'll let the chickens do that 3 or 4 times. And by the time they're done with that over 1 or 2 years, I end up with some of the really best black leaf compost, leaf mold that you can imagine. And I'll use that then for fertilizer on my garden. So I'll put it out maybe 3, 4 inches on top of a vegetable garden bed, maybe once every couple of years. So then the other thing I use is wood chips. I use lots of those. I get probably 30, 40 loads of wood chips delivered a year now. And I'll use that in the same fashion to suppress the grass and the weed growth and then turn it into compost over time. I use it as a mulch. Usually what happens when I use the wood chips, I get a lot of mycelial fungal growth as well in the wood chips. And I know that's going to do good things for breaking down the wood chips and putting nutrition in the soil. And building up that microbial mycorrhizal fungi population in the soil. So those are my sole practices for fertilizers is leaves, wood chips, and chicken manure from my chicken coop.
Yeah, how do you beat the chicken manure? That's my favorite, chicken manure and wood chips.
Yeah.
Hard to beat. So if we let's get on to your education now and your career and get onto the how you started making money, how you started actually doing this as a job.
Yeah.
Did the consultant come after the PDC, or was did you decide to get a PDC, or after all that experience?
Yeah, so I told you about being a chemical engineer. And so when
Yeah.
I was in my last couple years of that, and I didn't know it was going to be my last couple years, but I thought, it's time to start looking for something else to do because I was getting tired of being an engineer. I was traveling a lot. I was traveling all through COVID and I was stuck in hotels a lot where I couldn't go out at night. You have to order in a meal, sit there and watch TV. That was not fun. It just so happened I'd subscribed to Jeff Lawton's Discover Permaculture email, and he announced that he was going to have an online PDC available. So COVID affected him the same way. He couldn't do the in-person courses anymore, and he'd already created an online course. And so I saw that, and I'd always wanted to go back to Australia and do Jeff's course. Never could afford it. I've got myself, my wife, we have 6 kids. And if I did the math on that, every single time it would cost me something like $20,000 just for the airfares to get back to Australia. And then I'd have to stay for 4 or 5 weeks, catch up with my family, travel all over. I'm thinking it's $50,000 to do my permaculture course with Jeff Lawton, right? And the course itself might have been, I think, $3,000 or $4,000, and all the rest of it's travel and meals and accommodation for the family. So when I saw him advertise it online for $1,400, I think it took me about 30 seconds to whip out my credit card and book my position on that course. So I literally completed that course on nights and weekends while I was an engineer, while I was still traveling, staying in the hotels. I got my permaculture design certificate course done with Jeff Lawton through his online course in 2021. And so that was October of 2021. And then one of the people who was on that course, more in a capacity as somebody who'd done it before and was like going to become a one of the teaching assistants for the course, contacted me and said maybe I might want to contract to do work for Food Forest Abundance. And it wasn't just myself, but you know, several other folks that were on that same course. We all got hit up by this one lady, Crystal, all at the same time to see if we wanted to come and do contract design work for Food Forest Abundance. And I did. So it was January of 2022 that I contracted with Food Forest Abundance. So I've just gone through 2 years with them now. And during that time, I've had just incredible fun doing lots of designs, literally all over four countries. I've done consulting work, you know, with online consultations in 16 different countries, probably 300 or more different people that I've spoken to for consultations, and probably completed now, I think I'm getting close to 65 or 70 designs in 2 years. So I did that for 6 months part-time. And again, while I was still working, and then I was enjoying it so much that I thought, okay, this is now my second career. And, you know, from that time, from January through to June of 2022, I was trying to work out how I could make it work financially. So, you know, with some good circumstances, you know, my career as a chemical engineer paid me very well. So I was able to save up, you know, a good amount of money to put in the bank so I could use it to cover a transition from one career to the next. And that worked. And then I was able to get enough design work, you know, where if I completed, you know, a couple or three or four designs every month, it would be enough to pay the bills for my family, given that we've paid for our home, paid for our car, didn't have any, you know, substantial debts that I needed to pay. That and, you know, the savings, you know, like I said, allowed me to make that transition from part-time to full-time permaculture work. And so now I've had 18 months of full-time work, you know, doing design work for Food Forest Abundance primarily. And I've been able to feed my family with it for that whole entire time. Sometimes there's been some dry spots. But like I said, you know, the savings has helped. And, you know, not only am I doing that design work and consulting work with Food Forest Abundance, but, you know, I'm obviously trying to continue to develop my own property. And there's a lot of work that I'm doing here as well in parallel, which, you know, soaks up some of the money that I make from Food Forest Abundance design work.
Best off. So you've from my calculations, you had about 40 years experience before you'd done the PDC. Quite possibly a unique situation.
Yeah, I mean, I look back at it, and you know, the experience, you know, let's say,
let's say 38 years in.
Yeah, exactly. So,
what I was going to ask is, when you done the PDC, was there anything that stood out that you thought, wow, I sort of missed that, and there was anything that was really sort of you'd been doing and you didn't actually notice,
yeah,
you didn't actually know what was
definitely the first thing that stood out to me was just the actual importance of doing a design. I'd never done one before,
right?
And so everything that I'd ever done was just by more gut instinct and good feelings than anything else, without really having any kind of plan for where I was going to put stuff. Yeah, I knew about companion planting, I knew about guilds, you know, I'd read enough about, you know, permaculture to understand those concepts, and I'd applied a lot of them, but I'd never, ever sat down and done a full property design for any of the properties that I owned, not once. And so when I went through the permaculture course, you know, for Jeff Lawton, and I had to do the full design exercise, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've actually got to think about this and then decide, okay, you know, where am I going to put things? You know, I did my own property here in Michigan as the basis for that design. And I learned a lot about my own property that I hadn't learned in the 6 years that we'd lived here prior to that. You know, so I literally had to sit down and think about all of the different things that were on my property, where they were placed, were those things ideal? You know, did I have the right access ways to get to all the things that I needed to? And so, you know, that was the very big realization for me, was the necessity of doing a design if you're going to then really apply good permaculture principles, it starts with that design work. Like I said, I'd never done one. And so once I was forced to do it by the necessity of the course, I learned a lot about design work that I never knew before.
Right. So you're able to do the elements all themselves, but then it's just putting that big piece together.
Correct. Yeah. And one of the exercises that was part of doing that design course that I really appreciated, there were two aspects of some of the exercises that Jeff had. One was the journaling that he asked you to do, where you'd go and sit in the same spot at different times through the year and journal your observations for that particular location. So I learned a lot about my property through that. And then the next thing I learned, we had to inventory all the plants on my property. And I documented over 140 different species of plants on my 2.3 acres. And I didn't know what half of them were. And then when I learned about what those half were, I found that probably 85, 90% of all my plants either were edible or had medicinal uses or some other benefit for the soil. You know, and so I was blessed with an abundance of, you know, call it permaculture plants on my property to start with. Didn't really know it until I actually went through that inventory process.
Yeah, no, that's interesting that the design process. And then I can't remember if we did the plant, because I graduated a month after you and started FFA the same month. But I was in the 2019 class.
Yep.
Took me a year extra.
Yeah, there's a lot of people took a longer time. And, you know, what I learned through that course is not everybody's doing it to become a consultant. You know, there's a lot of people who are doing the course so that they could just do a better job of designing permaculture with their own property and applying the principles better. So, you know, that's a choice. You know, not everybody does it so that they can do it for a business purpose. But, you know, once I learned, you know, that inventory of plants, I'm like, okay, now I want to add to it. Yeah. So I worked out that probably of all the plants that I had on my property at the time, maybe 15% were ones that I brought to the place and needed to do more than that. So I'm now adding a lot more. I've been fortunate to acquire another 4.6 acres of land immediately adjacent to the 2.3 that I started with. And was also fortunate that the folks that acquired all of the property, they're building a solar farm and it's completed now, Cormac, around me for 140 some acres. But they had cover cropped all of the land with clovers and all kinds of native grasses and everything. So the 4.6 acres that I've just acquired has already been cover cropped and is already demonstrating, you know, a lot of good benefits within the soil just because of that cover cropping that those folks did. So now I'm starting to map out that 4.6 acres and you know, I've got to redo my whole design because it was based on the 2.3 that I started with. And just to give you an example of, you know, some of the different impacts, I was somewhat landlocked, you know, with the 2.3 acres. It was keyholed into the land around it. And I never really had any good access to the back part of my property. Well, now I just drive onto the 4.6 acres and I can get all around my property easily now with a vehicle. And so I had designed a number of access ways through the center of my property with my original design. Well, now I don't need those, you know, because I can just make access around the outside. So I'm modifying my design for my property. Obviously now with, you know, an extra 4.6 acres, I've got a lot more plants that I can put on my property. And, you know, the challenge, if I've got anything as a challenge, is finding the financial resources to be able to plant everything that I want to, because I've got a long list
of as things always. So what you said, you'd, what's your local business called? Permaculture Adventures still?
Yeah. Permaculture Adventures of Michigan. So the website for that is permaculture adventures mi.com. So I've started that because, you know, I've always believed that permaculture should be local, you know, in many aspects. You know, my first really good experience, again, going back to Western Australia, was working with the local county conservationist and he wanted to establish a native plant nursery, and found some county land that we could make access to for no cost. And then we'd go out into the woods in Western Australia and start looking for native plants and seeds that we could harvest and come back and grow all those and propagate native plants. I've got fewer native plants available to me here in this part of Michigan than I'd really like to have. There's a lot of native plants available. I've already started to look at, the native provenances of different plants, right across Michigan, and where I'm at, it's like a native plant desert. And so that's one of the things that I would like to do is, do the same type of thing here locally is, create a plant nursery, on my property, which covers, not just, the fruits and vegetables and stuff that we'd like to grow for food, but also the native plants that belong in this area so that those can be repopulated, throughout this region. So that's one of the goals that I have, for that business. The other one is to, continue to support, all the customers that I've got in this part of the world where I do the installation work. So I'm doing design work for Food Forest Abundance. I'm doing some design work now for myself directly with customers. I've got customers where I've done the landscape installation work on behalf of Food Forest Abundance, again, contracted through them for those customers. And, they have me come back to do their work for them every year to, plant more stuff, further expansions, grow all their seedlings for their annual vegetables. I've got a great customer base here to support. And I want to use Permaculture Adventures Michigan as a vehicle for promoting that to more people, within my region. And when I say my region, we'll call it, the southern part of Michigan, the northern part of Ohio, and the northern part of Indiana, primarily.
So how do you find the install work? Because I'm thinking it, like I know I interviewed Jose Ansalega and his model that he teaches on his PermaPro workshop is basically that you pair up with a landscaper so you're not digging the holes. So you're not actually planting it, so you project manage it and you design it and then you partner up with a landscaper. I like that kind of model. But you're out there digging the holes and putting up the fences. You're in the trenches.
The partnering with a landscaper is definitely not my model. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but I've always done my own work. I mean, going back to my own properties, Cormac, for the last 30 some years, I've dug all my own holes. Honestly, I couldn't really afford to hire anybody else to come and do it, so I've acquired a lot of tools and equipment, over that time. And I promise you, there's some of the equipment that I've got actually came with me from Australia, wood chippers and stuff like that, that I still own. And I've learned the skills for using all of it and applying it. So what I like about the install part of the work, I mean, this is a double-edged sword. It's very physical. There's a lot of hard work involved. So there's a fitness aspect of that I enjoy. But then, there's also the fact that I get worn out from the physical labor. I'm in my mid-50s and let's just say I wish I'd probably started doing permaculture install work when I was in my 30s. But in any event, I enjoy very much the interactions with my customers doing the install work. If I was just doing the project management part of it and not digging the holes, I might see or have them perceive that I'm maybe not necessary for the work to be done. When I'm digging the holes, pouring the concrete, putting fence posts in place and planting all the trees, they can see me physically doing the work. They know that I'm essential to the task and, they enjoy me being there, not just because I'm doing the work, but I'm also providing them with education at the same time. So at least three of my five customers here in Michigan that I've worked with have valued me for the education that I'm providing to them and their families as a permaculture designer. They're learning from me while I'm planting, while I'm digging holes. They'll be asking me questions, well, why are you putting that there? And I'll, we'll talk about guilds. The thing that literally made me realize it was all worth it was when the 9-year-old daughter of one of my customers, you know, asked me to just wait a little while, and she went inside and then she came back and she had hand-drawn flowers and put a message on there: "Mr. Graham, thank you for making our food forest."
Oh, very nice.
I'm like, you know, I'll keep that for the rest of my life, you know. And that was a pretty miserable day from a work perspective. It was raining and foggy and misty and everything. I can't tell you how much it made my day at the end of the day to get that and a bag of candy from this young lady. So for me, you know, that education part of it is really important. You know, so the install part of my business is a vehicle for me to spend time with my customers to do the education part, which they appreciate.
Great stuff. What's on the horizon for yourself? Any big plans, or just keep at it, more of the same?
Yeah, I'd say more of the same. You know, obviously with the 4.6 acres that I mentioned, you know, there's a lot of work to be done there. And so that's, you know, literally enough to keep me busy for the rest of my life. You know, I do want to develop it into a market garden. So not just from a permaculture perspective, but, you know, going back to the produce, you know, with the annual vegetables, you know, so that I can create that additional source of income. So I'm studying a lot about market gardening from people like Jean-Martin Fortier up in Canada, who's, you know, world renowned for market gardening. I've got a lot of work to do there yet. Planting 1,000 asparagus plants in spring, for instance, you know, which is coming up here in a couple months. A perennial vegetable that grows well here in Michigan. And, you know, I hope to turn that into, you know, a future part of my market garden sales. So there's that, is the market gardening. I'm going to continue to do design work for Food Forest Abundance. You know, I'm in a position now with them over 2 years where I've been one of their design team leaders. I'm now one of their sales managers. And so I'm now working on some of the bigger projects for them where I'm writing the sales proposals for the company to do all the design work on very large scale projects. And I'd like to see some of those come to fruition. You know, some of them are 1400, 1500 acres.
Wow.
And, you know, those are very, very large scale opportunities. And that creates an opportunity for me, all the rest of the designers and Food Forest Abundance to put itself on the map, so to speak. So I absolutely still want to be a part of that. As I mentioned, you know, with my own business here locally, you know, trying to develop permaculture within, you know, call it 100 miles of my place, so it becomes well known that I'm here to do it. I've actually already learned that there's a permaculture facility over at the Catholic College about 7 miles from my house. I've visited with those folks, and, you know, we've got a lot of work that we could do together to collaborate on the educational aspects within the local region. So I'll be doing that for sure. And then, you know, continue to see where that takes me. I mean, I've got the desire to have a nice customer base of maybe 10 or 12 customers where I do the repeat service work for their properties, and continue that install part of the business, you know, for the future, and not just for me, but for my kids that are growing up, so that I can give them some opportunities as well.
Great stuff. And finally, any advice for someone looking to get into the design install side of things? So somebody in their 30s, maybe,
yeah,
who's just graduated with a PDC, how would they approach getting into the design and install game?
Yeah, well, so I think the biggest part of it is understanding that that exists. I mean, it's not just design work. I see, you know, folks that graduate and just want to do design work. I see some folks that graduate and just want to do the install part of it. You know, they want to build things. And, you know, I think understanding that, you know, there's multiple facets to the business opportunity for a permaculture design course graduate: design work, consulting work, installation work, education, ongoing service and support, you know, gives you a lot of different opportunities. You know, in my case, I've got my own property, so that provides me with a lot of opportunities to be reaching out into the community. And whether you're on a house lot in suburban Minneapolis, you know, or you're sitting on 1,500 acres in Colorado, you've got that opportunity to demonstrate permaculture, you know, within your community and promote it. So, you know, some folks could see that as a career path is just providing the education and the outreach in the community, and giving tours, you know, these days for folks is a way, you know, to literally make money showing people, you know, your property. or turning it into bed and breakfast opportunities where people can come and learn permaculture and stay on your property if you've got a larger space to do that. So my advice to the folks that are graduating, recognize that there's multiple facets of how you can make income. It doesn't just have to be one thing. Hook up with other designers, to mentor you. I've had that opportunity now on probably four or five different occasions, with designers that have joined Food Forest Abundance to mentor them as they start their career doing permaculture design work. That's very fulfilling for me, and it helps, those new people to understand, what I can do, and they can learn from it and create new skills for themselves. So I'd certainly advise, the PDC graduates, the first thing you should do is start to network with others and find yourself a good mentor to work with.
And do Vine Permaculture's PDCD Pro course.
That's absolutely essential. I
Yeah,
take that for granted.
and learn digital design and technology.
Yeah,
So just
that's the
basically,
big
so
part.
yeah.
That's the big part right there, Cormac. The digital design part was something that I was not strong in. I literally used Microsoft Paint to do the design for my permaculture design, full design exercise with Jeff Lawton. And so I had to learn, two new packages of software, from a design perspective in order to be effective in doing the design work. That's a skill set that I've now got. Thankfully, I'd done a little bit of graphic design work before, so I could work my way around a computer for graphic design using things like Photoshop or Illustrator. But yeah, learn those packages. They're not expensive these days to purchase.
Are you still
And
using Affinity?
yeah, I am.
That's
I'm
what we
using
teach.
Affinity version 2. That's the one
Yep.
that I still find the easiest to use. I've still got Photoshop on my computer from when I used to do graphic design for labels. But I just find the Affinity is very easy to use. It's inexpensive. It hasn't cost me $100 to buy both versions of it so far. And I've now built up an asset library of plant icons within that that makes it easier for me now to drag and drop when I'm doing design work. And so that's the package of choice for me. But there's multiple packages that are suitable. Adobe Illustrator is another one that is quite popular. I know some folks that use Google SketchUp, Inkscape, and some other folks now are starting to branch out into doing 3D design work, with other software. But
Yeah, I
Affinity
think
works for me.
to me that's where it probably is heading in the future, especially with the developments of AI. You'll just be able to tell it, draw me a garden, please build me a garden with these plants in it. Here's the spec, and I'll just
Well,
boop.
let's just say that's part of the reason why I still like using a shovel. Sometime in the future, the computer might replace me as a designer. And we can laugh about that now, Cormac, but the time's already here where that can happen. So I've already seen enough AI packages to know that that capability exists from a design perspective. And it's only a matter of time before somebody takes it to the level where they can do permaculture design with it and do it halfway well.
I agree, yes, it is possible, but I still think people want that personal touch. They don't want to
Absolutely.
be talking to a robot. They want you in their garden
Absolutely.
digging the hole.
Yeah. I mean, when I go through the process, from starting a consultation to going through to the end of the design and doing the installation, it's the personal aspect definitely that people value. There's a knowledge base that I've got here that I've acquired over 30 or 40 years, and that can be replicated in a computer, no doubt. But being able to apply it intuitively, I don't think AI is quite there yet. And I think people, like you said, would prefer to speak to a person. I think, with all of the digital interactions that people have from day to day, I think now people are starting to verge more towards wanting to have personal interactions as being the basis for their transactions. And that's what I'll continue to do.
And a 9-year-old girl isn't going to write a computer,
No.
a card.
Yeah.
Graham, that's been great catching up.
Yeah.
Anything you want to add before we go here?
No, I mean, just.
Where do people find you? So if I want to work with you, if somebody wants to work with you, how do they go about that?
Yeah, so the website again is permacultureadventuresmi.com. You can find me on Instagram. My handle there is just my first and last name, Graham Towerton, all one word. And then, you know, if you go to either of those places, then you'll see on Instagram, I've got my link tree in my bio. You'll be able to see then all my blog articles that I've written, my YouTube videos. I've got a YouTube channel, which is frankly only still got 7 or 8 videos on it. I don't put a lot of stuff there. Most of my stuff ends up on Instagram. And I've got a Permaculture Adventures Facebook page as well. So that's where people can find me. You can contact me through the website. Drop me an email, fill in the contact form, book a free consultation, and I can help anybody out that's interested in having some help within that Midwest region, Central Midwest.
That's great, Graham. Thanks very much. And
hey, you're welcome. Thanks, Cormac. I've enjoyed it. It's been good to catch up.
And guys, that's been Graham Thornton on the Permaculture Vine podcast. And again, all the links will be in the description. And the link to PDC 2 Pro as well is down in the link. If you want to learn that digital design and sort of kickstart your career, we teach digital design, how to use a plant database, some AI in there as well, I think, social media stuff, and how to build a basic WordPress website to get you up and running. And thanks very much. I'll see you all next week. Cheers.